We're holding on Lamed Daled Amud Beis, about 12 lines from the bottom. Yeah, 12 lines from the bottom. We think yesterday our Mishnah had said that dinim mominus, you have to be dinim by day, but you can finish off and give the verdict by night. We said Reb Meir disagrees with that, and Reb Meir says that even the Gemara din of dinim mominus has to be by day. Din nefashis, as we're going to go on to say shortly, everybody agrees have to be completed by day. Verdict has to be given by day as well. So we said that the Chachamim say that there are two, the Chachamim point out that there are two psukim, one of which, so Rava had pointed out, on the one hand, you have a pasuk that says they judge the people at all times, implying day or night. On the other hand, we have a pasuk that says on the day that a person bequeaths his inheritance to his children, implying that nachlos, which are one type of dinim mominus, take place only by day. So therefore, so Rava had said, according to the Chachamim, it means that one of them is talking about the beginning of the din, and the other is talking about the Gemara din. So now, on the other hand, again, we said Reb Meir had pointed out, he holds there's a hekesh between dinim mominus and the dinim of Saras, and we established, therefore, according to him, just like Saras has to be, the whole thing has to be done by day, the same way dinim mominus, the whole thing has to be done by day. The only thing is, we said that unlike Saras, where you can't see it at all times of day, and it can't be on a cloudy day, etc., by dinim mominus, you don't need that, it does have to be by day, but it's fine if the weather is not cooperative, etc. So the Gemara says, and the last thing we did, so that was the last thing we dealt with is what Reb Meir does with the pasuk that says, b'chol eis, he says, it doesn't mean by night, it means on cloudy days or things like that. So the Gemara continues with Reb Meir, hi, b'yem hanchiva yas bon of my oven lay. What is Reb Meir doing with the pasuk that says on the day that he bequeaths his Yerusha to his children, which implies that takes place only by day? So the answer is Avumi Boyle, the Chidatoni Rabba Bar Chanina Kameh de Rab Nachman. He uses it to teach us this, that Rabba Bar Chanina taught a braise in front of Rab Nachman. That this pasuk, v'hoya b'yoyim hanchileyes bonav, that it will be on the day that a person bequeaths to his children, where the pasuk continues, then he has to give the double portion to the Bechor. So we learn from the word b'yoyim, b'yoyim atamapil nachos, only by day are you able to give out nachos. Mapil literally means to make full, because many times when you're doing a nachla, you do it using a girdle, the same way as when they first came into Eretz Yisrael, they use a girdle to determine what shevet, what gets what territory, the same way, when you have a bunch of yorshim, very often you'll do something, we learned about this in Bava Basra, very often you'll do a girdle to determine which of the children will get which section of the nachla. So therefore, so it uses the word mapil, literally meaning to make full, because that's often how you do it in terms of girdolas falling. Anyway, so the braisa explains b'yoyim at the mapil nachlos, only by day are you able to give out nachlos v'iyat the mapil nachlos v'alayla, but not by night. Because in other words, the pasuk didn't have to say the word b'yoyim otherwise. Omalei, but Reb Nachman says, what does that braisa that you're quoting mean? Elamayata, by your logic, if you're saying that nachlos can't be bequeathed by night, only by day, by your logic, are you telling me that only if a person dies during the daytime, then his children yarshin him? Whereas if he passes away by night, his children don't yarshin him? Obviously not. Maybe what you mean, maybe your braisa that distinguishes between day and night is not talking about the actual Yerusha itself. Of course, that's going to happen any time the person passes away. Maybe it means the din of nachlus, meaning that if the person himself, before he passes away, gives out a tzavah, gives out instructions while he's alive, then if he does it by day, then it's considered a din, and you don't need dayonim to ratify it. As opposed to by night, then you would need dayonim, because then the ones who heard it are going to be only aiding. So Tosfos points out, by the way, that now the we learned over and over in Bava Basra the concept divrei shchiv merak ksuvin v'chimesulin damu, that when a shchiv merak says something, it's considered as though written and signed. So we are going to still draw this distinction that you have between day and night. The Tosfos points out that whole point about divrei shchiv merak itself is only drabanan. Here we're dealing with the meaning of a posuk. Therefore, we have to say the posuk is distinguishing whether a kinyan was made or not. The concept that a kinyan would create a transfer of ownership, would create that you have that what he said is definitive, that concept itself is daraisa, but we can still distinguish within that itself whether he did it by day, where it's possible to do a din of dinim mominus by day versus by night. Namely, and Tanya, as we learn in another braisa, the pasuk says v'hoisel of neisul l'chukas nishva. After the Torah goes through in Parshas Pinchas, after it goes through all the details of the order of Yerusha that we learned about in Bava Basra, first comes a person's sons, and if he doesn't have any sons or their descendants, then his daughters. No daughters or their descendants. Then we learned in Bava Basra, it goes to his father, which it doesn't say explicitly in the pasuk. Then to his father's other sons, etc. And we learned in Bava Basra at the beginning of the eighth parak the whole chain over there. So, and the pasuk finishes off after it goes through all those details. It says, "V'hoisel of neisur l'chukas mishpat." This, all of this, shall be for the Jewish people as a chukah of mishpat. Chukah and mishpat, of course, as we know, are both terms that are used for mitzvahs. More specifically, chukah means a mitzvah that we don't understand the reason. Fine, but the point is, in other words, that chukas mishpat means, in other words, that all of this is a mishpat. All of this is a din in dini mominus. Which means, therefore, Ura kol parsha kol alias din. So we learn from that the entire parsha is being completed and summarized. The word Ura, Rashi translates over here, and Rashbam translates similarly in Bava Basra, and Nistaima, it's complete, it ends off. After having given all those details, the pasuk is ending off and telling us kola parsha kola, that entire parsha lias din, that it's considered in a certain sense a din as in a fixed judgment. Meaning, which means like the way Rabbi Yehuda explains in the name of Rav. If three people come to visit a sick person, and he gives them instructions of what he wants to do with his nechosim, Rotsu Koisvin, if they want, they can just write it down as though they were Dayanim, and then the Yosh, as though they were Edim rather, and then the Yoshim will take that document to Beis Din, and Beis Din will supervise the actual distribution of the Nechosim. Rotsu Oisin Din, if they want, they themselves can be the Dayanim. Since there are three of them, and as we learned in our Masechta many times, three Dayanim, you need three in order to be a Beis Din, so the three of them can choose to be a Beis Din, and therefore we're saying that what they're saying is going to be binding based on what the Chola, based on what the Shchiv Merah told them. On the other hand, Shnayim, but Rabbi Yehuda continues, if only two of them came to visit Kosvin Ven Osin Din, then they can only write it as Edim. They can't actually make the Din because there were only two of them, and two are not enough to be a Beis Din. In fact, the Yad Ramah points out it would mean even if a third person joins together with them, they can't say, well, now we're three, now we can be a Beis Din, because to begin with, we already became Edim, and the Gemara explains, Ein Eid Nasadayan. The Gemara explains in various places, a person who was an Eid cannot become a Dayan, so therefore they can't now become Dayanim even when a third one joins up with them. The point is, so we have that din. Now, that doesn't distinguish between day and night, but Ve'omer Rav Chista. But Rav Chista further explains on that point. Loishanu el b'yoyim, that whole distinction between two or three of them is only if they visited him by day. Ava b'layla. But if they visited him by night, and by night, again, you can't do din et Torah, then even if there's three of them, Kosvin ven Osin Din, then they can only write it, they cannot execute the judgment, Mishum Dehavalahu Edim, because at that point they become Edim, and as we just said, the Ein Eid Nasa Dayan, when they themselves are Edim, they themselves can't turn around and become Dayanim about it. So therefore, so Rav Nachman says to Rav Bachanina, is that what your braisa means? Your braisa that distinguishes between day and night, is it trying to make that same distinction that Rav Chista made explicit? That here you have a case where the visitors themselves can be Dayanim, but only if there's three of them and only if it's by day. And Rabbi Bachanan says, "Ein hachi kamina." Yes, actually, that is exactly what that braisa that I quoted means. You were wondering, does the braisa mean to imply that there's a difference when the person dies in terms of what happens with the nachla? Of course not. No, it's this distinction as far as whether the people that visit, what their role can be as edim or as dayanim. So the point is, Reb Meir is going to use the words, he agrees with that point, and therefore he's going to say that that's what we learn from that pasuk, and therefore he doesn't have it available to learn that in general, dinim mamonos have to be begun by day. He says all dinim mamonos have to be begun by day because of the hekesh that we learned about yesterday. So therefore he uses this pasuk specifically for this point about when it comes to nachlois, about what they can do in terms of edim versus dayanim. Tosfos refers over here to something they talked about in detail in the first paragraph, where sometimes you have the people who observe something, are they necessarily considered edim on it or not? And we talked about over there that there's a distinction whether they meant to give edus or whether not, because we talked about, for example, you can have, for example, brothers or other relatives who are part of a crowd that observe something. If we don't have a way of distinguishing which ones are edim and which ones are not, then the edus is going to be possible, because as we've learned, brothers or other relatives are possible to be edim. So we talked about then when we learned this on Daf Test that, for example, a practical nafkamina of that we have all the times by weddings is that the Masada Kedushin will announce that the following two people are the two Edim to the exclusion of all others, meaning, in other words, that we're saying explicitly that nobody else who's here should be considered an aid, so that way, even if it turns out that other people there are relatives, which obviously there's going to be, or Psulei Edus, then they don't impinge on it, because only the two that we designated, and the Rav has, of course, made sure in advance that those two are not Psulim and not relatives, those two will be the Edim. So Tosfos earlier in the Masechta discusses that in light of our Gemara over here, where we're saying the same kind of thing. In other words, the very fact that they saw it doesn't automatically make them edim. They can have in mind that they don't plan to be edim; they plan to be dayanim. And we're saying that it does work. Next, the Mishnah had said dinin nefashos dunin by yoyim v'chola. We said that dinin nefashos, we have to both judge by day. The discussion, the maso matan, has to be by day, and we said the verdict has to be given by day as well. And we said further, as we're going to discuss soon in the Gemara, that if the verdict is going to be guilty, they have to hold it over for the next day. So menahani mili, where do we know that from? That no part of dinin nefashos can take place by night. Because the pasuk says, the pasuk describes how you have what happened when the Jewish people got involved with Bnois Midian at the end of Parashas Balak. And the pasuk says that Hashem tells Moshe, take all of the leaders of the people. And the pasuk says, "Vahuika oisam laHashem neged haShomesh," hang them up before Hashem in front of the sun. Now, it doesn't mean when we're saying take all the leaders of the people and hang them, it doesn't mean to hang the leaders of the people. And there's a drasha about it, because, you know, the leaders are responsible for what happens, but the pashut pshat is, in other words, that the leaders are going to be the ones who are going to be supervising, who are going to be judging the dinin nefashos in this case, and hanging those who are chayav that. By the way, hanging, of course, is not one of the dalagmas it's based in, but later on in the sixth parak of our Masechta, we're going to talk about how there are certain people who, after they're given skill, afterwards their body is hanged for a short while, and that's what we're talking about over here. Anyway, the point that it says neged haShomesh, in front of the sun, means that it has to be by daytime. So we see that the verdict itself has to be done by day. Rashi mentions on the pasuk of Dirosha that it means also that the Anania covered would move aside, and the sun would shine on the guilty people, and that way they'd know who's guilty, so they could execute them. Okay, but the point is, in other words, that all of the executions and punishments had to happen by day. Now, the pasuk is vahoika. How do we know what the word vahoika means, anyway? How do we know that the word hoika means hanging? So you have here, we have to go to a different story in Tanakh. You have in Sefer Shmuel, you have a story where there's a famine in Eretz Yisrael for 3 years, and David finds out from Hashem, through the Urim V'Tumim, that it's because Shaul had mistreated the Givonim. When he wiped out Novir HaKohenim, the Givonim suffered from it also. Kitzur HaMaaseh, anyway, the Psukim describe, David goes to talk to the Givonim, and they tell him, we want blood. The only way we're going to be appeased is you have to take 7 members of Shaul's family and hang them, and then we'll be willing to be moichel you. The Gemara tells the more details of the story in Yevamos. David said these are cruel people. We don't ever want them to intermarry into the Jewish people. Anyway, the pasuk says that they say v'hoitanum l'Hashem, we will hang them up in front of Hashem, begivas Shaul, bechir Hashem, in the hill where Shaul, the chosen of Hashem, had his capital. So we see, in other words, that there. So we see the same word v'hoika. Here we have v'hoikanum. We will hoika them. Now, how do we know from that pasuk what hoika is? Uchtiv, the pasuk continues further on, after the 7 people have been executed, but two of them, the pasuk describes, were the sons of Rizpa Bas Aya, who was a Pilegesh of Shaul, and the pasuk says, Vatikach Rizpa Bas Aya as a sack, she took a sack, Batateu Lor Latsur, and she leaned it against a rock, Mischilas kot, mitchilas actually is how it says in the pasuk, from the beginning of the harvest. What happened is, Rashi explains on the psukim over there, based on other gemaras, that the 7 of them had been hanged and been killed and hanged at the beginning on Chol HaMoed Pesach. Which is the beginning of the harvest season. Now, normally the bodies are supposed to be buried on the same day, as we're going to learn later on in Armas Sefer. However, in this case, the Gemara explains in Yevamos that they left the bodies unburied for several months in order to make a great Kiddush Hashem. The whole thing to begin with had been a Chilul Hashem, the way that Shaul had not treated the Givonim right. Now, instead, it made a Kiddush Hashem because people would pass by and ask what happened, and they would be told, here, these are members of the royal family, and they were killed because they harmed, because Shaul had harmed low-class Geirim. Keep in mind, the Givonim themselves had originally gotten their way into the Jewish people by trickery, by pretending that they're from some foreign, faraway nation, and therefore gotten Yeshua and the Skanim to make a treaty with them. So they're like the lowest of the low among Geirim, and nevertheless, we still respect them to that extent, and Hashem still stood up for their honor to that extent, that when they were angry, then Hashem caused a famine. The point is, in other words, that and the pasuk describes how she took the sackcloth and used it to help protect the bodies from being eaten by birds of prey or wild animals or whatever. So we see the bodies are exposed over there, and where would that be? What kind of punishment would do that? If it was one of the Dalad Mrs. Basin, the bodies wouldn't still be sitting there all that time. Therefore, hekanum means hanging, where indeed the bodies are left outdoors for a period of time. So therefore we see that the word v'hoika means to hang. Therefore, now applying that back to the pasuk in Parshas Balak means that Hashem is telling Moshe take the leaders and have them set up Batei Dinim and judge the people who are guilty of worshiping Avodah Zarah in connection with the girls of Moab and Midian, and hang those people. And then the plague will be over. So we see, but since it says Neged HaShemesh, in front of the sun, then we see from that that such a thing has to take place Dafka by day. Okay. So, Uchtiv, now let's analyze further the pasuk. It says, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, kachas kol roshei ha'am. Hashem tells Moshe, take all the leaders of the people. And the pasuk continues that hoika them. So, ima am chotu roshei am machotu. On the face of it, it makes it sound as though we're supposed to hang the leaders. But why should we do that? What do the leaders do wrong? Amr of Yehuda Amr Rav, Amr Lo Yakadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, means Hashem is telling Moshe, not that the leaders are to be hanged. Okay, again, there's a drasha about it along the lines of that we're saying the leaders are always held responsible for what the people do. But at least in the pshat of the Gemara, means Amr Lo Yakadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, Chalak Lahen Botei Dinim. Hashem is telling Moshe, divide up and have many Batei Dinim who are going to judge the people. There are many people who were involved in this whole thing, who got involved with Bnos Midian. So therefore, so Hashem is telling Moshe, take all the leaders of the people, meaning set up a bunch of small Batei Dinim where they're going to judge the people individually. And then, v'hoika oisam, and then again, give them skila, and give them hanging because they got involved with the girls from Moab and Midian, and because they got involved with Avodah Zarah. to last my time. Why is Moshe being told to Davka have so many to have so many botted dinim for the purpose? Are you going to say it's a practical matter? Because you can't judge two dinin nefashos on one day. There's a rule that one beis din cannot judge two dinin nefashos on one day. But doesn't Rav Chista say loishana el b'shtei misses? That's true, but that applies only when the two people who are being judged are going to be getting two different misses. Meaning, Rashi says, because after all, we need, as we've been learning so far, the members of the Beis Din have to put in a lot of effort in order to find reasons to exonerate the person. If we have two different misses, two completely different Averis and two different misses, then it's going to be hard for them to focus on one after the other, so they may not focus thoroughly on each one to try to find every possible reason to exonerate him. So that's only when it's two misses Beis Din. Avo b'missa achas donin. But if it's the same Missa, then they could. Meaning, if it's one Aveda and one Missa, then they could. Here, everybody who's being judged and punished is for the same reason, because they worship Avodah Zarah. So what would be the problem if you have one Beis Din, were to have all the defendants in front of them, and then discuss it all among themselves, and then say, Yankel and Beryl and then Mendel and whatever, all of you are Chayiv Missa. What would be the problem with that? The reason why they had to have separate bata dinim for a separate beis din for each person is Kadesh Yoshev Charon Afni Yisrael, because the pasuk describes that Hashem was angry at the Jewish people and a plague had broken out, so they wanted that to end as fast as possible. When Hashem sees that everybody is busy with it, then Hashem will realize that we should calm down and not punish the Jewish people at large for what these people did. Meaning, in other words, let's say you only have Moshe's Beis Din, the Beis Din of the Sanhedrin of 70 or 71 is judging and punishing the guilty parties, and everybody else is kind of sitting on the side, then that would, so to speak, motivate Hashem to say, well, you know what, listen, so obviously everybody else doesn't care, so therefore they deserve punishment because they know what's going on and they're not Moshe. When instead you have those many smaller batidinim, every group of 23 is getting together to judge, then that shows Hashem, you know what, everybody is taking this seriously, and we want to get these people punished as fast as possible, and that causes Hashem to reciprocate and to take away the plague. The point, though, is, again, that was a side point, but the point is that we see that all of this had to be davka by day, neged hashamash. So from that we learn that dinim nefoshes have to davka be done by day. Tosfos points out, by the way, based on a Tosefta, actually, that even when it's that what you need is, in order for a Beis Din to be able to judge two people on the same day, it has to be not only it's the same Misa, it has to be not only it's the same Aveda, but the same Misa, meaning, in other words, we're going to learn later on in the Masechta, you have a case of a Bas Koyen who's Mizana, where the din is that under certain circumstances she gets Srefa. We're going to learn later on Daphne Aleph about the details of that. A Bas Koyen, whereas the boil would get Chenek, as usually happens with an Eishes Ish. The default punishment for a Noya from the Ephes is Chenek. Sometimes there's an upgrade, so to speak, and sometimes instead there's Srefa and Skila, or Skila, as we'll learn later on in the sect of the details. So now you have a case of a Bas Koyen, she gets Srefa, the man she was with gets Chenek, even though it's the same Avera, and they were both obviously involved in it together, nevertheless, Beis Din has to judge them separately because there are different misses involved. As opposed to, for example, if it had been a regular case of Eishes Ish, where both of them are getting Chenek, then we're saying Beis Din could judge them both together. And similarly, we're saying over here, if it had been, let's say, a matter of a bunch of people worshipping Avodah Zarah, then the Beis Din could judge them one after the other, all on the same day.
Or all together, also.
Or all together, yeah. Okay. Next, we said another distinction between dinim mominus and dinim nefashos. Dinim mominus, gomrim b'yom chola. We said dinim mominus, you can give the final verdict on that same day, as opposed to dinim nefashos. If the verdict is going to be l'choiv, then you can't do it that day. Then you have to wait for the next day. So the Gemara says, Minahani Mili, where do we know that from? You have a pasuk in Yeshaya. He says about Yerushalayim, Meleasi Mishpat. It used to be full of judgment. Elsewhere, by the way, the Gemara mentions an interesting point. There were 481 Bate Dinim in Yerushalayim at the time, which is a gematria of the word Meleasi. It was a huge city. There were millions of people in it, so they needed a lot of Bate Dinim. Anyway, Meleasi Mishpat, Yerushalayim had been full of justice. Tzedek Yolenba, justice would stay overnight in it, but after Meratzchim, and now there are murderers. So in other words, the Pasuk is saying, the Yeshaya is telling them, you used to do the right thing. You used to do Tzedek Yolim Ba. You used to do the right thing. When it comes to Dinin Nefashos, you would wait until the next day to decide the verdict. Now, you're not doing that anymore, so therefore he's saying you're being like Meratzchim, you're being murderers because you're not taking the time to think over the case carefully enough and see whether the person is Hakachai of Misa. So therefore, so you see from that that they're supposed to leave over the verdict for the next day, and therefore, in fact, the Yad Ramah adds also, we know we're talking about Dinin Nefashos because the previous pasuk says Yadeichem Damim Maleu, the Navi criticizes them and says your hands are full of blood. So therefore, so we know that we're talking about Dinin Nefashos over here. Rava says Mehacha. You have a different pasuk, a few pasukim earlier, where Yeshaya also says, he says Ashru Chomotz. Now Ashru means strengthen. Chomotz, we're understanding. The word Chomotz means acid, but it means vinegar. But Chomotz means the one who has been wronged. The one who, the, a chomitz, another meaning of chomitz would be a gazlan. So chomitz would be the one who has been nigzal, the one from whom the gazlan has stolen. So Rava is darshaning the pasuk differently. He's darshaning the word chomitz not to mean the one who's been wronged, but rather meloshen chomitz. Meloshen, you think about it, you leave dough long enough, it becomes chomitz. So therefore, Rava is darshaning the word chomitz in that sense. Ashru, strengthen and compliment the Dayan, that Ashru Dayan Shemachamet Es Dinoi, give praise to and strengthen the Dayan who delays, who's Machamet the Din, meaning who leaves it overnight in order to rethink it over and decide whether in fact his original thought that the person is guilty is correct, or whether maybe afterward he can find reasons to exonerate him. So the Gemara says v'idach. Now Rav Chanina, what does he have against that pasuk that instead he's going to learn the din from the pasuk tzedek yolen bava atamaratzchim? The answer is because he holds Ashru Chomotz v'loy Chomotz. He says the word Chomotz over there has nothing to do with delaying the din. It has to do rather with the idea. Again, you have the Chomotz, which is the Gazlan, and you have the Chomotz, which is the Nigzol. So we learn from that the Pasuk states strengthen the Nigzol, not the Goizol. What does that mean? So Rashi explains like this. In Baba Kama, the Gemara explains, Minayim l'skokin l'tevei atchila. You have a din Torah between two people. You have a plaintiff who's coming to Beis Din with a complaint. This person took money that belongs to me or whatever. And then you have the other person, you have the defendant, the nitva. So now, imagine, for example, you have, Rashi describes, two people come to Beis Din then. Reuven says, listen, Shimon, I lent you money, you never paid back, where's my money? Shimon counterclaims and says, you know what, I gave you a mashkin for it, and you've damaged that mashkin, so now you've lost the mashkin or whatever, so the mashkin should counteract then. You lent me $100, I gave you a mashkin of $100, maybe even I gave you a mashkin that's more than $100, so therefore I don't owe you anything, or if anything, maybe you owe me something. Which case does Beis Din deal with first? So first, Rashi says Beis Din is going to deal with the basic claim. Reuven is saying that Shimon owes him money. We're going to say, listen, Shimon, do you have any proof that you paid it off, or that you didn't borrow the money or whatever? And if not, then pay up. Afterwards, we'll deal with this matter with the mashkin. So we learn from that. Ashru Chomotz, we say, the Pasuk is saying, strengthen and give precedence to the din of the Chomotz, the one who's claiming that he's been wronged, namely Reuven, who's saying, I lent you money and you haven't paid it back, rather than the Chomotz, rather than dealing first with Shimon with his counter. Claim.
Also, obviously, this way, how did the Seder first let him learn?
Right. So Torah's first actually deals in some detail with what the chiddush of it is, and then what the situation is. I mean, we're not going to be matriach based in twice, really. We're not going to say that first he's going to make him pay, and then later on we're going to have to come to a new din Torah in order to deal with the matter of the mashkin. So fine. Here we're talking about that, here maybe Tosfos points out the loiver is not, doesn't really have as much of a substantial claim. He's basically just saying lishtamuti. He's just trying to say something to sort of to push off or to get out of paying it. So we're not going to deal with that. But then Tosfos also discusses a little more about that. Then Tosfos brings a couple of other explanations. One of them is, it doesn't mean as far as dealing with the entire case first. It just means whose edim do we listen to first. So let's say, for example, in our scenario over here that Ashi's describing, first we're gonna listen to Reuven's edim, who says, you owe me the money. Afterwards, Shimon has a counterclaim. Yeah, but I gave you a mashkin. Fine, we'll listen to Shimon's edim next. The point is that we have to do it in that order, even if that means, for example, Tosfos says, even if, let's say, we're concerned that Shimon's edim are going to be going off to Medina Sayyam, we're going to die soon or whatever. Nevertheless, we learn from the pasuk we have to listen to Reuven's edim first. But then Tosfos doesn't really like that explanation. After all, if it is an emergency like that, maybe we should listen to them first. And then another case Tosfos says is you can have where it's not a matter of a loan, for example. It's rather, for example, Reuven is saying, Shimon, you injured me, and therefore you're chayav nezek tzar, etc. And Shimon says, I have other counterclaims against you, so then we're going to take care of Reuven's case first. He said, Reuven should have been saying, I have edim, on the other hand, that I have other claims against you that counteract that, so we're going to say we're first going to deal with Reuven's case. That's another example of Ashru Chometz. Different other Mephoshim talk about different other possible cases, different other exact scenarios where we're going to say that we deal with one versus the other. The point is, and by the way, actually, the Yad Ramah points out the word chomoitz literally means the one who squeezes or the one who grabs. So therefore, again, it means the one who's who's saying that we're accusing somebody that he took money from somebody else unlawfully, and we're saying, the pasuk is saying, ashu chomoitz, we're saying that we're saying the chomoitz means chomutz, means the one from whom it was grabbed, and we're going to say we're going to deal with his case first. Anyway. So the point is, Reb Chanina is learning that din from this pasuk, Ashru Chometz v'loy Chometz. So don't give precedence to the Chometz, to the one who's being accused of grabbing from somebody else. Rather deal with the one who claims that he's been wronged first. And in fact, the Baal HaMor says, Taka, an explanation along the lines of one of the answers of Tosfos, that it just means that Beis Din first investigates Reuven's claim before they start investigating Shimon's claim, but they don't actually do them as two separate, Din et Torah, because like Tosfos says, why bother Beis Din twice? The Idoch, now what about Rava? Hi, Malayasi Mishpat, my Avidlai. What is he doing with the Pasuk about that Yerushalayim used to be full of justice and it used to be Tzedek Yolimba, that used to leave over the judgment overnight? So what does he do with that Pasuk, since instead he's learning the concept that we have to leave over the judgment with the Din and Nefashos for the next day? He learns from the words Ashru Chometz. So the answer is Kedirab Elazar, Omer Rabbi Yitzchak. He uses the pasuk Malayasi Mishpat, the pasuk about Tzedek Yolin Ba, he uses it to teach us what Rabbi Elazar says in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak. To Omer Rabbi Elazar, Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, Kol Tainis Shema Linen Bar Asaf Tzedakah. Whenever there's a Tainis Tzibur, for example, for rain or what have you, and they leave over the Tzedakah overnight, now, usually what they would do is, when it comes to a tiny tzibur, they would give extra amounts of tzedakah, because in particular, the poor people would be relying on that tzedakah to have food to break their fast. So now, if instead they leave over and they give that tzedakah only the next day, so ke'ilus shoyfach domim, then it's as if they're spilling blood. Shenema, malayasi mishpat tzedek v'goymer, because the pasuk is saying, because they left over the tzedek for overnight, va'atam aratzkim, then now they're considered murderers because they didn't give it today. So Rava says that's what the pasuk means. Nothing to do with leaving over the verdict for the next day. We're talking about, which is the right thing to do, but rather we're talking about leaving over the tzedakah that should have been given on the fast day, and instead giving it the next day, and we're saying that's the wrong thing to do. But the Gemara points out the Hanimili Rift of a Tam, the Hanimili, the Rift of a Tamri. Now that would only apply as far as giving them bread or giving them dates. That's ready to eat food, and they expected to break their fast on that. Alva Bezuzi, but if we're talking about giving them money for tzedakah, Chiti Vesayri, or wheat and barley, those are all not things that they can eat right away. The money they're going to need to use to buy food, the wheat or the barley they're going to need to grind and whatever and make into bread. Less one bar, there's no problem with that if we leave that over for the next day and hand that out to the Aniyim the next day. They weren't relying on that. They weren't relying on that to break their fast. So therefore, there's no problem if the Gaboi Tzedakah in town give that to the Aniyim the next day.
Everyone knows they're not relying on that
because practically speaking, if it's money, they can. They're not going to be able to go shop by night. Wheat and barley, they're not going to eat it raw. They're going to grind it up and make it into flour.
But they could do an hour.
It still takes time. The point is that they're not expecting to have it today to break their fast on, as opposed to ready-made bread or dates or things like that. Ready-made food they were expecting to have, yeah. Okay. Fine. Now, the Mishnah continued, because we have to leave over the verdict, if it's a guilty verdict with Dinin HaFashis, we have to leave it over for the next day. The Mishnah said, L'fichach ain don in chula, therefore you can't judge Dinin HaFashis on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, let's work that out. My timer, why is that? Mishum de la Epsha, because if we do it that way, we won't be able to accomplish it, we won't be able to follow the correct rules of how it's supposed to work with Dinin HaFashis. Case 11, because let's go through the possibilities. What should we do? L'dayinim b'malei shabsa. Should we say that we're going to judge the person, we're going to bring the case to Beis Din, we're going to hear the edim, we're going to start deliberating on Erev Shabbos, v'ligmir l'dayinim b'malei shabsa, and give the verdict on Erev Shabbos? Can't. Maybe a majority or a super majority of the dayanim are going to find reasons to declare him guilty. And as we just said, we have to leave it over for the next day. So they can't give the verdict on it. So if they're gonna exonerate the guy, sure, they could do that on Friday. But if it comes out that they declare him guilty, and we don't know in advance how it's gonna be, then they may end up having to declare him guilty on Shabbos. Well, should we do that? Should we do that? We're gonna judge him on Erev Shabbos and give the verdict on Shabbos. Well, then the problem is. Now, Tosfos points out that by dinim mominus, you have a gzeira midrabanan that you shouldn't judge dinim mominus on Shabbos because the chachamim are concerned that you might come to write. When you have a din Torah, there's going to be writing involved of the arguments and the verdict and whatever. But here, you still need eventually, when it comes to dinim mominus, you often need to write down a psak din. If nothing else, you may need to write a shtar, you may need to sign a psak din or whatever. But here, Tosfos points out, the sofer adayonim, as we've been learning before, have been writing down everybody's arguments, choiv and schus and everything, so therefore, not necessarily would there be any writing taking place on Shabbos. So fine, they could do that, but the problem is, the literally b'shabsa, would we say that then they execute the person on that same day that the verdict was given, on Shabbos, can't. Ein ritzicha deuches Shabbos. Executing a person is not deuches Shabbos, as the Gemara is going to work out in great detail in the next part of the sugya, how we know that Beis Din cannot execute a person on Shabbos.
That's the day also.
That's not the problem. That's not the point. They could have, if it weren't for that issue, what they could have done is they could bring the person to Beis Din on Erev Shabbos, discuss it all on Erev Shabbos, come back together Shabbos morning, give the verdict, and take him to be executed on Shabbos. But we can't, because as the Gemara is going to point out soon, you can't execute a person on Shabbos. So, should we wait and we're going to execute a Motzei Shabbos? Can't. We just said before, Neged HaShemesh V'Einan, that the whole verdict and the Misa has to all take place by day, Neged HaShemesh, in front of the sun. Ligmer l'dinei b'Shabbos. So should we say that we give the final verdict on Shabbos, v'lichtelei b'chad b'Shabbos, and we're going to execute him on Sunday? Doesn't work either. Nimtza'at ma'anes dinoi. It comes out then that you're unduly delaying the din.
Making
him suffer, basically. Meaning, Rashi explains, it's one thing, until the verdict is given, it's not called inui adin. Because he always figures there might be some, they might find some way out. They might find some reason to exonerate him, new edim might show up, etc., etc. But once they've given the verdict, Now, we are going to learn later on the sixth parak that even after the verdict is given, before he's executed, they still have, they have horsemen and a flag and a flag relay and so on and so forth. So that at the last moment, if they find some evidence in his favor, then they'll stop the thing. But it's highly unusual for that to happen. Generally speaking, once the verdict is given, we expect that the missa is going to come shortly afterwards. Very, very unlike the way you have, let's say, you know, the Havdil in the American legal system where a person can be declared guilty and then he sits for 30 years on death row. You know. Anyway, so once the judgment has been given, then already it has to be done as soon as possible. He's already, you actually said, mitzapa lemisa. He's already looking forward to, most likely, he's going to get executed, and therefore it would be inri adin. It would be delaying the judgment to wait a whole other day. So therefore, he can't do that either. Now, the only other possibility, maybe we should say, fine, you know what we'll do? We'll have the Dayanim deliberate on Erev Shabbos, then we'll leave it over until Sunday morning, and Sunday they'll come and they'll give their verdict. Why don't we do that? The problem is, Minshu Tamayu. The problem is that the Dayanim, during that 2 days, are going, between Friday and Sunday, are going to forget the reasons that they gave why to exonerate him or why to declare him guilty. You're going to save Afagav, the Shnei Sefer HaDayanim Ognim of Fnehem. Now, we said, but we learned before, that you have the Sefer HaDayanim, you have the court reporters who are standing over there, the coast of Divra Mazakim and Divra Mechayvin, and they're writing what everybody who said schus, what the reason behind their schus was, as we learned before, because you want to make sure that they're learning from different psukim, and all the mechayvin, what they're saying from. So therefore, so on the face of it, all the Dayanim have to do is look at the court transcript, and they'll see. The problem is, it's true that the Sefer HaDayanim can write down what the Dayanim said, but libad inshi inshi, but the heart of a person is inshi. Now, the Gemara is actually kind of using a play on words over here. The word inshi can mean people, but it can also mean forgetting. So the Gemara is kind of saying two expressions in one. Libid inshi inshi means every person's heart is the person. Meaning there's things that a person thinks in his mind and his heart that he can't really express. In terms of chassidus, you know, you have there's malchus where a person actually expresses verbally what he says, but behind all that you have all the midas and you have chochma bina and das and everything, and it's hard to express. You can't always express fully in speech what you're thinking in your mind. So therefore, as much as he may say, and the Sefer HaDayanim are going to write down the words that he said, but the thought process behind them is not something that can be reduced to writing. The other meaning of the Gemara, libid inshi inshi, what a person was thinking in his heart is very easy to forget. Meaning, in other words, if you're going to have a 2-day break between the original deliberation and the decision, meanwhile he's going to have forgotten the thought process that brought him to this conclusion. So he'll know, fine, he's going to say, I know I concluded such and such, but the underlying basis, the underlying thought process, that he may forget, and having it written down, and having written down the bottom line in front of him is not necessarily going to help him remember that.
Those are shorthanded.
So the libid inshi inshi is kind of a play on words over here. It means a person's mind, a person's heart, is the person himself, meaning it's not something that you can transmit to somebody else. And also, libid inshi inshi, what a person thinks in his heart, he can very easily forget. Hilkach loy efshir, so therefore it's not really possible to do it like that, and therefore of necessity we have to have that the deliberations and the verdict are going to be on days back to back, and since, as we said, you can't do the actual verdict on Shabbos, because then you can't do the execution on Shabbos, therefore, we can't leave the verdict over to Sunday, so therefore that brings us to the din of our Mishnah, that you can't judge the case to begin with on Erev Shabbos. So what you do is, therefore, you put the person temporarily in a holding cell or something until Sunday, and then you start the case on Sunday. That's not inui adin, because again, like Rashi said, during that stage of things, the defendant is still going to think there's many possibilities for me to get out of this. More edim will come, they'll find that the edim against me are psulim, they'll be contradicted during the cross-examination, etc., etc.
The famous American, I was crazy.
Yeah, I remember that again. Okay, fine. Okay. Now, we mentioned before that ritzicha, that based in executing a person, is not Dercha Shabbos. So let's analyze that point. Where do we get that from? So now, the Gemara is going to actually start off with a side discussion, which eventually is going to lead back into that. So the Gemara says, Amalei Rish Lakish L'Rabbi Yochanan. So Rish Lakish begins a discussion by asking Rabbi Yochanan like this. Now, we know there's the concept of mess mitzvah. You find a mess where there's nobody available to bury it. The definition elsewhere the Gemara gives is that you call out and nobody answers, so you know nobody is within earshot. So then you have a mitzvah to bury that mess. So, by the way, Tosfos points out an interesting point. This that we're saying in Mitzvah Derches Shabbos is that it's not so much that the preparation for the Mitzvah based in itself involves a Chilul Shabbos. It may not, because it may be considered Mekalkel, but the fact is the Mitzvah based in has a positive purpose. The purpose of it is to give a kapara for the person. Therefore, the Melachos that are involved with that on Shabbos, it's not considered Mekalkel, which is also only Dirabbanon. It would actually be also Daraisa. Okay, so Rish Lakish asks Rabbi Yochanan like this. We know there's a concept of a mess mitzvah, but we also know that if you find a mess mitzvah on Shabbos, you don't bury him on Shabbos. Because that would be, there were various malachas involved in the burial. Digging a hole, for example. But now Rish Lakish asks Rabbi Yochanan, or to hake for us mess mitzvah deicha Shabbos. Maybe indeed we should argue logically that if you find a mess mitzvah, you should bury him on Shabbos. In fact, the Torah Chaim says the question is not really only on a mess mitzvah. The question really would be on any mess. In the back of the Gemara, the mitzvah Eson says maybe not necessarily. A regular mess, you could say, fine, it's not such a bizoyan to him to leave the body over for Sunday. But a mess mitzvah, he's lying over there out in the open and nobody's available to bury him. You would think because of bizoyan a mess, maybe you should be allowed to. So I know Shlokesh is asking that you should have a logical reason to do that. And the reason to say that would be the Kavah Choymer. You should be able to say that based on a Kavah Choymer. Uma avoida shadoicha Shabbos. Madach the avoida in the Bais Mikdash which overrides Shabbos. You have shchita. You have a bunch of other things that are done in the Bais Mikdash on Shabbos, even though those involve malachas, and yet you do them on Shabbos. Nevertheless, kvoras metz mitzvah doicha oisa. Nevertheless, burying a metz mitzvah overrides even the avoida. So if a Kohen is on his way to do the avoida and finds a mess mitzvah, then he goes and buries that mess mitzvah, even though it means, first, not only is he delaying the avodah, I mean, he's not going to be able to do the avodah at all, because he's going to become tamei, and nevertheless we do that. And we know that, mi v'la achoisei. We know that from the word v'la achoisei, and ul achoisei, actually, in the pasuk. The pasuk describes by nozir, the pasuk says a nozir is not allowed to become tamei mess, al nefesh meis lo yavoy, then the pasuk mentions four relatives, lo'ovi v'la'imoi lo'ochi v'la achoisei lo yitamalehem. He's not allowed to become Tomei for his father, mother, sister, or brother. Now, once it's said he can't become Tomei Mess, why mention those four relatives? So Rashi brings from the Sifri that we learn something from each one of them. When it says his father, means his father he can't become Tomei to bury. But a Mess Mitzvah he could. If a Nozer is walking along and he sees a Mess Mitzvah, then he goes and buries him. He's a Nozer and he's not supposed to become Tomei Mess. That applies to his father, but not to a Mess Mitzvah. From his mother, we learn the concept that would be even if he's a Nazir and a Kohen, so he has a double level of Kedusha, nevertheless, he still overrides that to bury the Mess Mitzvah. From the word La'ochiv, we learn not only if he's a regular Kohen, even if a Nazir is a Kohen Gadol, then he also, the same rule applies, he buries a Mess Mitzvah. And now, from Ul'achosei, then we're going to learn another din, as we're going to go on to say now. So what do we learn from Ulach from Ulach Hoisei? We learn as follows. Suppose that a person, even we're talking about, let's say, so far it's the same as we said before. He's a Nazir and a Kohen Gadol, and he's going to shecht his Kohen Pesach, or he's going to do a Mila for his son. So not only does he have that double and triple level of Kedusha, being a regular Kohen, and on top of that a Kohen Gadol, and on top of that a Nazir, all of whom are also to be Tomei Lames, and he's on his way to do a very important mitzvah, Korban Pesach, or Bris Milah, and the Shomash Mes Loi Mes, And nevertheless, he hears that a close relative of his dies, Yochol Yitama, you would think maybe he should be able to become Tomei for him after all. After all, a Kohen is it becomes Tomei for his relatives. No, Amarta lo Yitama. That's why the Pasuk is saying that he doesn't, because a Kohen Gadol doesn't become Tomei for his relatives, and neither does a Nazir. You would think maybe the same thing should apply to a mes mitzvah, that a case like this, where he's a nozir and a kohen gadol, and on his way to bring kohen pesach or to do a milah, maybe he shouldn't become tamei for a mes mitzvah. No, talmud lema la'achoisei. Therefore, the pasuk says, and for his sister, meaning la'achoisei u'de'en matameh, av matameh la'mes mitzvah. So he doesn't become tamei for his sister, but he does become tamei for a mes mitzvah, even in that case. Even when you have all those kedushas piled up on top of one another, and mitzvahs piled on top of one another, nevertheless, mes mitzvah overrides that. Tosfos actually points out that we don't have to say like Rashi that we mean he's a Nozir and he's a Kohen Gadol and he's on his way to bring the Korban Pesach, etc. It can mean just the fact that he's going on his way to bring the Korban Pesach itself means that alone, the Pasuk is saying, you would think maybe he should be Metameh for his relatives, and we're saying that no, the mitzvah of Korban Pesach overrides that. However, in other words, the point is, nevertheless, though, so we are talking, so he's not necessarily a nozir, so he's a nozir, a regular person would bury his mess, and then he'd bring Pesach Sheni. But we're talking about over here, if he's a Kohen or a nozir, and doesn't have to be a Kohen Gadol, then nevertheless, a Kohen Gadol or a nozir, neither of whom can become Tomei for their relatives, so it doesn't have to be both, it's one or the other, and he's going to Shecht his Korban Pesach, then you would think that maybe, you would think that there's an esser on him not to become Tomei for his relatives. There's an esser to bring a Korban Pesach. Maybe the one esser would override the other, and we're saying that not. He nevertheless goes and brings his Korban Pesach or does the Bris Milah. There's an interesting vort on this that's brought from Rabbi Loza Moshe Horowitz. It's brought in the back of the Gemara, and in turn his son-in-law was the Torah Tmima, Rabbi Baruch Epstein. He brings the same explanation in Torah Tmima on Chumash. Where do we get from v'la'achoisei that we're from the word u'la'achoisei that we're referring to specifically to Korban Pesach and Bris Milah? It says like this, because those two are the only two essays where there's kores involved. If a person fails to bring a Korban Pesach when he could have, or he fails to have a Bris Milah, then he's chayav kores. Every other case of kores involves a lav. Now, the word ul achoisei is punctuated unusually in the pasuk. Usually, the word would be vila achoisei, like you have at the beginning of Parshas Emor. Here instead, the nekudas on it are ul achoisei, which we can darshan from that. Then the Gemara, in effect, is darshaning that it means l'achoisei meloshen ichui, meloshen combining, meloshen joining back together. So you have a case where a person would have been chayev kores for failing to bring the Korban Pesach or do the Bris Milah. So therefore, so in other words, his neshama is going to be cut off from Hashem, Rahman al-Islam. Then ul achoisei, we have two mitzvahs that are meant to reunite, reconnect his neshama with the Edishter. Nevertheless, the Pasuk is saying, and so the Pasuk is saying, if there's a mes mitzvah involved, that overrides that, but otherwise not. So that's how we learn from the ul achoisei that we're referring to a case where a person is on his way to do one of these two mitzvahs. Anyway, the point is that, so Rish Lakish resumes his Kal V'Chomer. So far he was saying like this. So the Gemara had interjected to explain how we know from ul achoisei. Rish Lakish had said that point. For us who are learning the Gemara later on, we need it spelled out what Rish Lakish meant. But so far his Kal V'Chomer went like this. Again, the Avoida in the Beis Mikdash is Doicha Shabbos, because you do the Avoida even though it involves various Malachas. Nevertheless, even if a person is on his way to do the Avoida, for example, to bring a Korban Pesach, he still overrides that to do a mes mitzvah. So then, by that logic, continues Rish Lakish, Shabbos shenidchus b'fnei avoda, in that case, then Shabbos, which, as we're saying, is overridden by the avoda, because you do the avoda in the bes mitzvah, even though there's malachas involved, ein adin shetek vos mes mitzvah doicha oisa. How much more so that burying a mes mitzvah should override Shabbos. So therefore, the din should be that you find a mes mitzvah, even on Shabbos, then you should be able to bury him on Shabbos. Tosfos actually brings up a point. Wait a minute. When it comes to, we're saying that Shabbos is there's a difference between Shev Val Taseh and Kum Vaseh. When you're saying that, how is Avodah being overridden by burying a mes mitzvah is passively. You're not actively not doing the avodah. You're passively, you're not going and bringing the carbon pesach, because instead you're busy with the next mitzvah. How is your shlokish thinking to learn from that you should be able to actively override Shabbos by doing a malacha of digging a hole and burying the next mitzvah? So Tosva says, still fine. Rosh Lakish says, Kal v'chomer is still that the point is that the avoda is obviously so is a much lesser thing. There's no kodesh or mitzvah based in or anything involved with that, and yet it overrides Shabbos. So kvoras mes mitzvah shouldn't at least a mes mitzvah shouldn't be less than avoda. Anyway, so that's Rosh Lakish's question. Amalei, so Reb Yechanan answers him, and this is why the sugya comes in over here, because we're going to talk about Mitzvahs Beis Din. Amalei, Ritzicha Techiach, so Reb Yechanan answers him, you can prove to the contrary from Ritzicha, from Mitzvahs Beis Din. After all, Shadoiches Avoida, because Ritzicha, executing a person who's Chayev Mitzvah, is Doicha Avoida, in the sense that the Pasuk says, regarding a Koyen, Me'im Mizbechi Tikachenu Lomus, that if you have a Koyen who's Chayev Mitzvah, even though he wants to go do the avoda in the Beis Mikdash, we don't let him do that, we bring him to Beis Din. Now, Rashi points out, if he already began an avoda, we don't have him interrupt the avoda, we have him complete the avoda that he's in the middle of, then we take him from the Mizbeach and bring him to Beis Din. But if he's on his way to do the avoda, we tell him, sorry, we need to bring you to Beis Din to judge you for the case where you're Chayav Misa, and you're, even though that means overriding the avoda. Tosfos actually points out that on the face of it, there's a different reason anyway. Once a Kohen has killed somebody, for example, if that's what we're talking about, then he's anyway possible to do the Avodah. We find that a Kohen who killed somebody is possible to do Birkas Kohenim. So Tosfos says, first of all, the Eved, if he did do the Avodah at that point, he wouldn't be Mechalalit. Yes, a Kohen who killed somebody should not do the Avodah, but nevertheless, he wouldn't be Mechalalit if he did. Second of all, Tosfos says no. Actually, Mesius Kapayim Duchening is different. You have the Kohen's hands, through his hands, the bracha is coming to the Jewish people. We don't want the very same hands that killed somebody are going to now be used as a vehicle for bracha. It'll be almost like Ein Kakega Nasa Shanega. But to do other kinds of avoida in the Beis Mikdash, that's not such a problem. Even if he was a Ritzeach. Yeah, by the way, this is brought in Shulchan Aruch. A Kohen who's killed somebody is not allowed to duchen. They talk about nowadays, what if it was an accidental thing? What if, for example, a Kohen was in a car accident, for example, and then killed somebody, Rahman al-Islam, is he allowed to duchen? There's a discussion about that. Anyway. The point is, Rabbi Yochanan tells Rish Lakish, let's look at Ritzicha. So we see that Ritzicha doiches avoida, ve'ena doiches a Shabbos. You see that it is doiches avoida. Again, we're saying that if a Kohen is about to do the avoida and he needs to be brought to Beis Din to be judged and executed, then we do that. So we see that Mrs. Beis Din overrides the avoida, ve'ena doiches a Shabbos. But Mrs. Beis Din does not override Shabbos. So therefore, so you see, he says to Rish Lakish that your Kavachomer, where you wanted to say, based on avoida and Shabbos and Mes Mitzvah is not necessarily valid. Well, that is, then Rish Lakish asks that itself. Ritzicha gufa tidches haShabbos mekal v'chomer. Well, very well. Maybe we should say that Mrs. Beis Din overrides Shabbos. Maybe we should use a similar kal v'chomer. Ma avoida shedoiches haShabbos. Ma dach avoida overrides Shabbos, because you do the avoida even though there's malachas involved. Ritzicha doicha oisa, and yet Ritzicha overrides the avoida. Shenemar, because the pasuk we just said, me'im mizbechi dekochenu lamus, you take a koyin from the mizbeach to be executed. Meaning, again, he's about to go on to the Mizbeach to do the Avodah, and we nevertheless take him away to Beis Din. Shabbos, Shenidchas, from the Avodah, well then, Shabbos, which is overridden by the Avodah, because you do the Avodah on Shabbos, ain't a din, should have the Tzicha Doi Chorisa. Maybe indeed Mrs. Beis Din should override Shabbos. Maybe we should say that Beis Din does execute the person on Shabbos. The answer is we can't. Amar Rava kva poska tana dvei Rabbi Shmuel. Tana dvei Rabbi Shmuel already establishes that it's not so. That Mrs. Beis Din cannot take place on Shabbos. The Tonad Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, when the Pasuk says, Lo Tzevaru Esh, the Pasuk says, don't light a fire in your dwelling places on Shabbos. Ma Tamad Leimer. Now, why does the Pasuk need to tell us that? We have 39 Malachas. Why is the Pasuk signaling out burning a fire? What do you mean, Ma Tamad Leimer? We know why. Ilur of Yosi Lalav Yotzes, Ilur of Nosim Lachalik Yotzes. Because we have two different Tanoim who say there's a reason why the Torah singles out lighting a fire. Rabbi Yosi holds that it's Lalav and Rabbi Nosim holds it's Lachalik. Tidetanya, as we learn in a Braisa, what does that mean? Havara Lalav Yotzes Divir Rabbi Yosi. Rabbi Yosi says Havara is singled out that it's a Lav. According to him, all the other 38 melachas. A person would be chayav misa for, but Rav Yossi learns that it's, this one is only a lav. If a person were to light a fire on Shabbos, according to Rav Yossi, he's not chayav kores or skila, he's only over on a lav. So Rabbi Yossi, you know, we have in the Yud Gomer Midas, Shatur and Dreshes, we have in the Brayse of Rabbi Shmuel, we have Dovashari Bechlal, Yotzman Aklal. So sometimes we say it means that it's in a category of its own. So Rabbi Yossi says this would be an example of that. The Torah singles out lighting a fire, meaning that's different than all the other malachas. Every other malacha, a person gets Misa or Kores, and here he doesn't. Rav Nosson Omer, L'chalek Yotzah. So Rav Nosson says, no, this is an example of the loy l'lamad al-atzma Yotzah, el l'lamad al-klau kula Yotzah. So Rav Nosson says, we learn from this, that since the Torah is singling out, burning, making a fire, means we learn from that every malacha is considered a separate thing in terms of a chatos. Meaning, if a person, the Gemara talks about in Shabbos, if a person were to do many malachas on Shabbos, the Hel HaMechad, he doesn't know it's Shabbos, so he doesn't know that these are malachas, then he would bring a separate chatos for each one. How do we know that? Why shouldn't we say it's one Shabbos? Because the fact that the Torah singles out burning means that that's an example where he brings a separate chatos, and we learn from that every other malacha is the same thing. So a person were to do, he knows that it's Shabbos, he knows that it's also to do malachas on Shabbos, but he doesn't know that these three things that he did on Malachas, he's going to bring a chatas for each one. We learn that. We're saying that we learn from burning to all the other ones. The point is, what does Ritana de Rebbe Shmuel mean? Why does it say Lo Sivadoresh? According to either Rabbi Yossi or Rabbi Nosson, we know why it says it. So Omar Rav, Ritana Meshavis Kashalei. What Ritana de Rebbe Shmuel is bothered by, not why it says Lo Sivaru, but why does it say B'chol Meshvei Seichem, in all your dwelling places? Now that we need to know. Ma Tamad Loima. Mechti Shabbos Chavis Agufu. After all, Shabbos is not a mitzvah tluya baretz. It has nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael. It's a mitzvah that's on the person himself. Such mitzvahs apply everywhere in the world. So why does it need to say Meshvei Seichem as though it would sound like it applies only in Eretz Yisrael? Tosfos actually points out that elsewhere the Gemara learns something else from this word Moshevei Seichem, but the point is, in other words, it didn't have to say the word at all, but even if it did, it could have said Moshev voice. When it says Moshevei Seichem, means we can learn two different dinim from it. A din that the Gemara learns in Masechta Shabbos about the Bais Mikdash versus everywhere else, as well as what we're saying over here. So Mishum Rabbi Shmuel, Omer Talmud Achad, so one Talmud said in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, the reason is like this. Why did the Torah have to say that? So Moshavis, the Kosar Rahman, Lomali, why did the Torah have to say the word Moshavis? Which would cause us to mistakenly think that Shabbos applies only in Eretz Yisrael. So Mishum Rabbi Shmuel, Omer Talmud Achad, so one Talmud explained the name of Rabbi Shmuel as follows. Lefish Nemar, the Pasuk says, Ki yeh be'ish chet mishpat mavas v'humas. The Pasuk says when a person is guilty of something that gets him misses based in and he's executed. Shemeyani ben mechel b'mishabas. Now you would think from that Pasuk it means he gets executed no matter what day of the week it is, even Shabbos. What about the pasuk that says that a person is mechalal Shabbos is given missus based in? And again, as we said before, all of the missus based in themselves involve malachas. So giving him missus based in on Shabbos itself would be violating Shabbos. You would think chutzmi missus based in. Maybe the Torah is saying anybody who does malacha on Shabbos is chayav misa unless that malacha is for missus based in. On the other hand, you could say the other way around. Maybe the issue of Chilul Shabbos and the Mrs. Basin for Chilul Shabbos applies even to Mrs. Basin itself. And then you would say the positive about executing the person applies only on weekdays. So in other words, we can go back and forth over here. On the one hand, we have a pasuk that says that a person has to be executed, and it doesn't say what day of the week. On the other hand, we have a pasuk that says you can't be Mechal or Shabbos. So which one takes precedence? So maybe not. Maybe after all, it means that Mrs. Bastin, Vahumas, takes place even on Shabbos. So we wouldn't know one way or the other. We could go back and forth in one way or the other. And again, as Rashi points out, we had the Kavachoyma before from Avoda that we would think to say that it should. that should take place even on Shabbos. Note, Tamad Loimalei Sevaru Esh B'Chomesh V'Seichem. The pasuk says, "Don't burn a fire," which is one of the four mitzvahs based in to heat up lead and pour it down his throat, as we're going to learn later in the Masechta. You can't do that B'Chomesh V'Seichem in all of your dwellings. Now we have a different pasuk that also uses the word Mesh V'Seichem. It talks about a Ritzeach who has to be executed by based in. All of these rules that it says in Parshas Maaseh, how to know the difference between a Ritzeach B'Shoyeg and B'Mezid, and then a Ritzeach B'Mezid has to be executed, all of these should be a rule for you, the Dere Seichem, throughout your generations, V'chomesh V'Seichem, in all the places that you live. Therefore, we learn from that, Mama Shavas Amal Halam Beistin, that pasuk obviously is referring to Beistin. A regular person doesn't execute the Ritzeach, only Beistin does. So there, Afma Shavas Amal Khan Beistin, the same way when it says, Lysavaru Esh Bechomesh Veseichem, the word Mesh Veseichem refers to Beistin. V'omarachman Lysavaru Esh Bechomesh Veseichem. And the pasuk is saying that you don't burn a fire in Mesh Veseichem. So in other words, that's where we learn from Tonad Veda Bishmal, from that pasuk, that when the pasuk says, it doesn't mean just in your own house, don't burn a fire on Shabbos. There'd be no reason for the pasuk to mention that, because obviously the mitzvahs of Shabbos apply everywhere in the world. Rather, what it means is even in what's elsewhere called Mesh Veseichem, namely your Bati Dinim, nevertheless you're not allowed to execute, so you're not allowed to heat up lead for executing or to do any of the other Dalad Mrs. Beistin on Shabbos. So therefore, it's clear from that that we don't do that, therefore that breaks apart Rabbi Shmuel, therefore when Rish Lakish had tried to defend his Kal V'Chomer before about Mes Mitzvah being Derech HaShabbos, then now we can't do that. It's established that Ritzicha is not Derech HaShabbos based on this Jerusha from Lysavaru Esh, therefore now we say that the avoda is that even though Ritzicha overrides the avoda, nevertheless and avoda is Derech HaShabbos, but Ritzicha is not Derech HaShabbos, and therefore when Rish Lakish had tried to make a different Kal V'Chomer to say that Shabbos should be that Mes Mitzvah should be Derech HaShabbos, then no, it doesn't work. So ultimately, so we say that in fact burying a Mes Mitzvah does not override Shabbos, and you can't. You find the Mes Mitzvah, you wait till after Shabbos to bury him. So the Gemara is going to continue. We'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, that we're going to further analyze. I'm going to further analyze this point. Once we've established that Ritzicha is not Derech HaShabbos, then on the face of it, we should have other Kal V'Chomers that we could make to contradict certain things that we've said before in this discussion. So we'll continue with dealing with that tomorrow, Beis Hashem.